It was a real treat for this week's interview to catch up at a home in Pembrokeshire with Judith Francis, who I knew around 15 or 20 years ago when she was a student in the University of Wales. Judith was an evacuee during the Second World War. She was born in Radnorshire in the 1930s, and we talk about various Sunday school and church outings, various modes of communication, how she has snapshots of the past. She talks about some of her childhood memories. She talks about gas masks and air raid shelters and how she was petrified of putting on a gas mask. We talk about our phobias. Judith talks about her experience of being an evacuee, moving to the seaside where she made friends with other evacuees and practically lived on the beach. She talks about how they used to make their own entertainment when growing up, using imagination a lot and playing war games. Judith talks about her experience of growing up during the Second World War and tells us about one of the worst experiences she encountered involving two RAF men being washed up on the beach. There was no electricity until 1947, so Judith would listen to battery-operated radios. She remembers variety shows from different canteens, which would be broadcast each day on the radio in a programme called War Workers Playtime. She wrote to Tommy Handley and got, and still has, a signed photograph. She tells us what prompted her to learn Welsh and how she worked in the civil service for 20 years. She trained in the mid-1970s to become a teacher. She ended up becoming a lay reader and later after that did a degree in theology and religious studies. Judith talks about the relationship between having a faith and studying religion and theology, and talks about the difference between being a student in the 1970s when students received grants and then 25 years later when that was no longer the case. We also talk about the political heat around Welsh nationalism in the 1970s. And in the final part of the interview, we talk about whether it is possible to be nostalgic about negative experiences and whether Judith is a looking back or a looking forward type of person. So what an immense privilege to catch up with Judith Francis, my latest guest in this series of Nostalgia Interviews with Chris DC. It is an absolute pleasure to be in Pembrokeshire and to meet Judith Francis again. I think the last time I saw you would have been on your graduation day in, 2004?
That's right.
And actually have a proper conversation rather than do it by old-fashioned letter and Christmas card and trying to find space on the card to fill in. How do you say what you've been doing in a whole year in just a few lines on a Christmas card? So this will be a revelation. But tell me a bit then, Judith, about where and when you were born.
Well, I was born almost at Christmas time in 1935, so that's going back a few years. And it was in the Manse Maeselhelen, which is right up in Radnorshire, about halfway between Llandrindod Wells and Newtown. And the place hasn't altered at all.
Yeah. Do you go back there?
Very occasionally. I'd like to go back oftener, but it isn't always possible. Yeah. But I have been. Yeah. Oh, yes. And we've still got friends there.
Absolutely. But did it take you a while, though, to feel ready to go back? Because that was my experience. It took me years to feel I'm not ready to go back. I think maybe in some cases it's, you know, when you still feel that you're, it's almost like regressing to the age that you were, and you're worried that all the people who you'll see will remember you as who you were, and you almost want to say, you know, now I know who I am and I'm comfortable in my own skin. I've grown up, in other words. You feel I can say here I am, and then you sort of, if they have a question for you, you know how to answer that without sort of reverting to this, you know, naughty boy or naughty girl that they may remember you as being, you know, last time you saw them. But you're still in touch with friends though from there?
Yes. Well, of course, we moved just before my third birthday. But we went back a number of times, and we used to stay in Aberystwyth a lot when I was a child. And lots of the people in the area from the various churches used to come up for a church trip or a Sunday school trip, and we used to meet them. And so there was kept in touch. So I hadn't had much chance to be the naughty girl or the naughty, you know. Not then, later on.
Something I found, though, and I guess it's worked with us as well, is that if you really want to remain in contact with somebody and you're not, you know, in the days before social media, it wasn't that difficult to do that if you really wanted to. It's too easy sometimes these days that you can keep in touch with everybody, and it almost becomes, you know, you reach saturation point because you're like every day you're commenting on this person's posts and, you know, sort of trying to sort of see where everybody's up to, and it's overwhelming. But But you're right, you know, some of the most precious correspondence over the years is through letters. Like when I was at university, I would write to my parents. I'd ring them from the phone box every, sometimes, you know, two or three times a week. But we'd always exchange letters at least once a week. Yes. Always, you know, so in that sense, keeping those avenues open is really important. And it sounds like you've been doing the same sort of thing.
Well, usually, of course, now it's just Christmas cards. Yeah. Or might occasionally be a telephone call. Because I'm rather old-fashioned. I don't have a computer. Mm-hmm. I don't. Therefore, I'm not online or anything like that.
Yeah. No, my parents are the same. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Mm. Yeah. So in terms of where you grew up then, so you said you moved when you were 3 or 4 years old. Is that when you moved to the part of the world where you're living now?
No. We went to Newport, Mon.
Ah, Monmouth to Newport.
That's right. And the war started. And along came the Moms, and we moved soon, towards the end of 1940, went down to Little Haven in Pembrokeshire, and I more or less grew up there. I was there until I was 14.
And what do you remember from childhood? What are the things that most stand out from when you were very young? Can you remember any particular memories from those years?
Well, I know it sounds ridiculous, but I've got a lot of what I call snapshots.
Yeah.
And there were, even in Radnorshire, quite a lot of those. Something I see and then, but I don't remember anything else about it. It was just there. Yeah.
No, because some people say, don't they, that they can remember the photographs. They're not sure if they remember the photograph or the photograph being taken, but the two become bound up.
These aren't literal photographs.
No, no.
They're snaps in my mind,
you know.
Yes, I can remember. Do you want to hear any of them?
Oh, I'd love to, yeah.
Well, I don't know how I do remember some of the stuff, but somebody had come to lunch. It was when we were in Maestro Hallam.
Yeah.
And then I was put to lie down to have a sleep. And it was in the sitting room, which was just opposite to the living room. And I didn't want to go because I was afraid of missing something. But it was no good kicking and screaming. That was not allowed. So, fair enough, too. Anyway, I went in there. I remember the sun was shining and I was lying on the settee. I didn't want to be there and I wriggled and got down. And in a way of protest, I took everything off.
Yeah.
And I marched up the sitting room to the cabinet. And in the cabinet, my mother had a little statue of about an inch high. He was a minstrel just all in white and with his accordion, and I always fancied it, and I was trying to find a way of opening the door and getting at him. Couldn't do it, and I suddenly heard a noise and I was frightened. Yes, it was my mother, and she caught me. Apparently I had a couple of good smacks, and then I was dressed and taken back out again, but I don't remember that.
It's often those, I mean, quite a few people, you know, since I started doing these interviews have commented on how, you know, their earliest memories are ones, and it might be, you know, bad dreams that they've had, or indeed, you know, traumatic experiences involving insects or animals or a fall, or, you know, something that in some ways has kind of moulded them in some way, that it's almost like something horrible happened, but, you know, whether you build up an immunity, or in my case, I must have been stung by a wasp when I was young, because I've always had a great fear of wasps, and I don't mind going to the dentist, but I have a problem with needles, and I'm trying to, and I really think that it's traced back, because somebody once said to me, actually, was a pharmacist, because I had this huge inflated I've been bitten. And I thought, why have I got this huge sort of growing sort of, you know, patch on my leg? And he said, do you have a fear of wasps? And I thought, but it's funny, I do. But, and he said, yeah, that's what's manifesting. Oh. It's very strange. Mm-hmm. So almost the sort of the fear of something from childhood. But in your case, was there anything that you found that sort of, were you always then worried about being caught? Or were you never caught again, or did you become very successful at evading capture?
No, I think what I got really frightened of was a couple of years later, war broke out, Second World War,
You've already given your age, that's okay.
And we were told to have shelters put up in the garden and all this. And I remember watching my father putting ours up, and we had to go and have gas masks. And I didn't know about this. I was just taken off, right, sit there. And somebody put it on, and I didn't like it very much. They took it off again, that's the size, etc. So we went home, and then my father said, we'd better try it on again. And I went hysterical.
Yeah.
I was petrified. And they were frightened to death, because if I couldn't put it on and we had the gas, and I had a smack in, and which was understandable. And anyhow, the next day my mother had gone to do some shopping, and my father was there, and he said, let's try it on and show Mum that you were ever so brave.
Yeah.
And I was persuaded, and we managed to get it on. But ever since then, I've had petrified of being smothered.
Yeah. And the thing that I don't understand is when people who don't have that sort of fear, simply seem very insensitive sometimes. Mm. You know, somebody might say, oh, grow up, it's only a wasp. But those same people will then be, for example, I know somebody who's frightened of spiders. Well, I'm less frightened of spiders. But, you know, when you see somebody being hysterical, you think, well, hang on. Well, you know, when it's my phobia, you don't care. But you know, hang on a minute,
you know.
So a bit of parity there. So, yeah, but that's it. That is interesting, isn't it? That sort of carried through. But I know some people who just, for example, you know, can't fly or won't fly because they have a fear of, you know, something, whatever it stems from, you know, that they just will not go into an aeroplane through fear of what might happen. And, you know, and even if people say, it's in your head, it's not going to happen, it doesn't matter, you know, you're in such a hysterical state, you're not ready for that, you know, for a long journey, and it's not good for the other passengers, of course.
No, I don't like flying either. Again, you feel all claustrophobic, and I don't like flying at all.
Yeah.
And
but what about happier memories from childhood?
Happy memories.
Were there things that you remember? I mean, it's interesting because obviously growing up around the time of the war, one of my other interviewees was someone who was doing something actually funny from the First World War, and she was looking at theatre, and somebody had said to her once something along the lines of, you know, during the First World War, did people go to the theatre? And she thought, what a good question. And she looked at him and said, they did. But of course, I suppose it's like with Brexit or something. You imagine sometimes that if there's a big paralysis, if there's something going on politically or something that's dominating the news, you know, 20 years later, you probably think, what did we do? What did people do on a day-to-day basis? And, you know, often life just goes on. It has to. Like my grandparents met during the war. And, you know, obviously they didn't know if they'd see each other the next day. But they look back, or, you know, certainly there was a sense of it being, you know, they were happy days. They weren't happy days. But because they knew they may not see each other again, they made the most of every moment. But they did see the next day and the next day. And looking back, because there was a happy ending, it sort of changes their perception on that. But does that happen in your case a lot? You know, growing up during the war as well, you know, how did life carry on?
Well, I got evacuated. But I went to stay with my mother's people, because I would have been too young to have gone away. And I knew, in fact, when we were in Newport, I knew if we could get into the shelter, we'd be safe. But the danger was then the anti-aircraft was only just above the road. And, of course, the shrapnel was all over the place. And so, of course, we were out as soon as we could be, you see. Anyhow, I remember I was staying with my aunt, and then I was able to go. I started school, and then they said, "Oh, your father and mother are coming to stay for a week." Actual fact, they were collecting me and taking me home.
Yeah.
And then I was sitting down, and my father said, "Oh, by the way," he said, "we're moving again," and I said, "Not again." I said, "We've moved once," and he said, "And we're going down," he said, to Pembroke, he said, Pembroke, and to be by the sea. Now, I've got a memory that when we went from Newport one day on the train, and we went to Barry Island, and they had a little fair there, and my father took me on the horses, and we had a wonderful time, and on the beach and all, and then coming back, the train hadn't come in, so we had another go, but not on the horses this time. I was put on one of these little roundabouts for children, and it was in a red car.
Mm.
And I used to think after, oh, I'd love a red car. And you know, I've had five, not at the same time.
That's interesting. So every, you always get a red car?
Yes. Yeah. Not, I thought, no, I've had this second hand, so I had to take what I could get. And, it was a lovely day. So I thought we were going to Pembroke and that was going to be wonderful. But of course, you said Pembroke. But of course, it wasn't Pembroke itself. And of course, it was by the sea. Well, talk about people who say they feel they've died and gone to heaven. Yeah. Well, yeah. I had 10 wonderful years there.
Yeah.
And then there were a lot of evacuees down there, made friends. And we had quite a number stay with us.
Yeah. Has that always stayed with you, the sea? Because I've always, when I was at university, I had lots of friends in the Midlands. And they very, very, well, obviously they could go to the sea, but it wasn't something that they would do on a regular basis. So holidays were a bit more special. And of course, holidays would always be sea-based. But if you live somewhere near the sea, my sense is that you don't make the most of it when you live there because it's always there. It's like I live in Canterbury. I don't go to people think I must go to the cathedral every week, and I don't. Perhaps I should do, but you know. But there's plenty of sea around where I am. But on the other hand, when it's holiday time, you think, well, we live near the sea, so we'll go somewhere more, you know, in the country somewhere. So you sort of don't. And I look back and think when I was younger. The sea, Barry Island, was the closest to where I lived. But we went so infrequently, it's sort of like, you know, why did we not make the most of it? But you were in Pembrokeshire, but it sounds like you really did.
Oh, we practically lived on the beach. Oh,
yeah.
Had wonderful freedom. And then, you see, there was they built RAF camp. I mean, aeroplanes, we weren't out the sound of them, of course. But, you know, it was quite safe. There was no woman was attacked. No children were frightened. And, of course, when the Americans came, they were dishing out the gum and the rest of it, you see. But, no, I practically lived on the beach. I didn't like the towns. I went to school after a while in Haverford West, and I've never liked towns. It's an awful thing to say. But they said, are you going on? You could go on the same weekly ticket on the Saturdays. Some people like to go. Well, I don't want to go to Haverford West. I see enough of it 5 days a week. No, I want to stay by the sea.
Are you the same?
By the sea I'd be, summer and winter.
And you spend a lot of time by the sea these days as well?
Oh, yes, and in it in the summer, of course. Yeah. Oh, yes, I still love the sea, but I hardly ever seem to go there at the moment. No, but again, it's now become, it's only down the road, you know.
That's my sense. Although I've made a real effort in the last few years to do that, so at least I can create... some happy memories for the future.
Oh, yes, because you live near the sea.
I do, yeah. I know. I lived in a place called Herne Bay for just over a year. And sometimes I'd make a point, but there were always three different ways of driving to work. One of them was past the sea. And sometimes I'd think, well, I haven't seen the sea in 3 or 4 days, so you know, I'd make a point of going, so at least I could look out and sort of at least there would be that memory.
Yes, that would be,
For a day. But but as soon as I left, of course, I then thought, you know, I want to go back. So I sometimes do, actually.
But are you in Falmouth now?
No, in where I live now is quite close, because I'm in Canterbury, so you've got Herne Bay, places like Broadstairs, Dover, Folkestone, all very sea based, and the Thanet coast as well. So Whitstable, so it's all very appropriate, you know. But of course, sometimes my day just consists of going to work. Admittedly, my evenings are spent often in the cinema. But I, you know, I always mean to see. I often go to seaside towns.
Yes.
But I often go when it's too late to make the most of it.
Yeah.
But there's always the next day. That's what I work for. Right. Yeah. Yes. But what about other things from growing up? Because also with it being wartime as well, what about things like music or cinema? I mean, were they pursuits that
interested
you?
There were no cinemas in the Haven. Yeah. No. But of course, it was the first. When you're 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, no.
But it's what you
grew up with. We made our own fun.
Yeah. What sort of things did you do?
Exploring, climbing, and walking, and all that. And of course, we had some toys to play with and things like that. Friends come and we play and use imagination a lot. You know, we'd have a school and all this sort of thing, or a hospital, or something like this.
Yeah.
We like punishment schools, and we give the dolls a good hiding if they enjoy that. Well, talk about horrible children.
Oh, it's true, isn't it? Children, and mine are the same, that they will take on the role of the teachers I'll go to play areas, and they'll be fighting with each other to see which one's the teacher and which one's the pupil. Yeah. And you're thinking, but when you're in school, you're both the pupils, and you're very, you're very submissive and, hopefully well-behaved, that's what I hope they are. But then, when, of course, they're in play areas and so on, then they're sort of like, you're thinking, goodness me, this is, I'm hoping that this is your way of letting off all that steam.
Oh, yes, and of course, war games.
But with the war going on, were you sort of living out?
The aeroplanes, as we were up, the aeroplanes and bombing, and what we do to a certain Chancellor of Germany if he happened to come down.
Yeah.
Mm. We give him a cup of tea with some poison in it. Yeah, so my father had poison to put on some things in the garden. Yeah, I said, I'll make a cup of tea and put...
Yeah. Mm. But did you find then, at the time, to what extent was this hanging over you as a threat? Because obviously, thankfully, and eventually after 6, 7 years of war, but did you find at the time that, day to day, was this, real threat that you couldn't live... inverted commas normal lives, although for you that would have been normal, you would have grown up in this environment where you were always having to be prepared for adverse scenarios, but do you remember that? Was it sort of a period of panic?
Away from it, and I was told Jerry won't come here, but didn't know, but there were enemy planes going over, but they didn't we didn't have to have go down shelters or anything. I remember asking my mother one day, who's going to win the war? Oh, we are. And I believed it, and it never bothered me. When I read some books now about the terrible days that were, I don't know how the older generation, coped and kept going, knowing any minute anything could happen. And of course, children in the city would have had this awful pressure too. But no, we just sort of just got on with life. The worst part, the thing that ever happened, it didn't affect us really, playing on the beach one night, and in comes a yellow rubber dinghy and two dead men in it.
Oh, good heavens.
Mm.
Yeah. And did they find out who they were?
Well, we found out many years later. They were RAF, I remember seeing taken away. And I understand, they'd fall out of an aeroplane. Come on, there was a crash.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that must have been really traumatic.
But they were on our side anyway. Yeah.
But and I was talking to another colleague at work who was saying that, sometimes if you read the official accounts, what the politicians write or the military historians write, we know that Britain was in peril, was in crisis. But I remember this is the example he gave, and he said, but what about the housewife in a mill town in Lancashire? What was she doing day to day? If she kept a diary, what was she recording? Was she oblivious, or to what extent were international events on a day to day basis? Mm. And so, in your sense, what you were going to school every day, there was just a sense that there was something going on around which was horrendous, but there was this optimism that it was all going to be all right on the night, sort of thing.
Yes,
and it sounds as though you kind of made the most of it and had a really, with all this going on, quite a childhood.
Yes, we were quite oblivious. Some of the children knew more things, and we didn't believe them, and that sort of thing.
Well, that's what children do. It's that always, I'm used to that. People,
fortunately,
scenarios.
Nobody's father died among the other groups. So, quite a number of them, the fathers were employed at the aerodrome, so of course they didn't have to go away, and a number did, and I used to think that these ladies in the haven were all widows, and then after the war, all these men coming back, and they've been out, how they coped, I don't know, but they did.
And so cinema wasn't something.
Oh, there was no cinema.
But what about music? Was there live music? Did you listen to music?
No.
Or did you do that maybe at a later age?
Yes, some, but no, we didn't. Well, we had singing in school, and I went to a church school for a time, and so of course everything was, and that was nice. But no, we didn't. No, we didn't have concerts or anything like that. No.
No, because I grew up, and I think I've embraced it now when I talk about it a lot in these interviews, but you know, this sort of, one of the things we'd always be talking about in the playground, what was happening in the charts, what would the songs be like, who were the artists that we liked, and that was sort of a good way of forming sort of, you know, character formation really in the playground.
Yeah.
You know, we'd all have our particular likes and dislikes, and I think that was a particular thing for me growing up in the 1980s particularly.
Yeah.
That was the sort of thing, and I suppose my parents to a different degree did that, I think. But we used to, you know, record all of this, and I've still got all the tapes. But anything like that, did that impact on you at all? What sort of music would you listen
to? What happened was, didn't you hear any? Not much. Well, for a start, when we were in Little Haven, there was no electricity till 1947. Mm. So, of course, everybody who had radio, I think most had radios, we all had these batteries which had to be taken to Haverford West, and they had acid and something. They had to be, you know...
The battery.
Yes, batteries done. And then... and so everything was... You couldn't have it on all day. It was rationed. That sort of thing, you know, it'd be, and then of course I can remember it more or less. News was the great thing in our house, and then dinner time, for instance, there'd be war workers' playtime, and they'd be taking a variety show from these different canteens while we were having dinner. So we'd hear all.
Was it music while you work?
No, well, that was on, but no, this was now 12:30 to 1.
Yeah.
And it was called War Workers' Playtime.
Yeah.
Yes, and then you'd have Rob Wilton, and you'd have some of these old comedians, and then somebody would be singing and all this sort of thing. And in the evenings, there'd be that sort of entertainment as well. But when I was a bit older, it'd be towards just about the... Well, it was. I moved to this particular school not long before the end of the war, but a matter of about a couple of weeks. And if they were a town school, so of course they went to the cinema... And, of course, they knew all the... Well, it wasn't pop songs as we know them there, but they were the popular songs. They were songs from the show and that. And people were collecting pictures of film stars and royal family. So, of course, we all had our scrapbooks and we were cutting things out. And then a number of them used to write... to them and ask for a photograph, and they'd have one. And, and there was a comedian on... my great favourite was Tommy Handley in ITMA, and I wrote to him and I had a signed photograph.
Do you still have that?
Yes, I have. Yeah. I never took it to school in case something lost it or something, but I had it framed.
Yeah.
And there he is with his hat on, and I've got it here somewhere. And yes, oh yes, I kept that.
And do you miss all those programmes? Do you ever look back and think, you know, I'd like to hear them again, or do you feel it's consigned to that past? You know, is it something that almost you don't want to listen now in case you thought actually it's not that good, or is it a bit too sacred almost that's so part of a time and place that memories are enough?
We have heard, of course, over the years, you know, sometimes they put some nostalgic programs on, and I have heard a couple like that. They didn't seem to strike like they did at the time, because it was... But I found that even with some of the series of things now, more recent years, and then they put them on repeat, and some of those, oh, I can't wait to hear them. But then there's others which I say, oh, I don't want to watch that one anymore. No particular reason, I just don't want to anymore.
Yeah, and sometimes as well... And actually, I found that this weekend when I was with the students, is that, of course, I was joking to somebody that, of course, the stuff that's played at the school disco when you're 7 years of age in 1981 or whatever may not go down as well, you know, 40 years later the Lampeter School reunion, at the Lampeter University reunion. But we were talking about that and how it's very difficult sometimes when you have a particular investment in a piece of music, in a song or whatever.
Yes.
And then somebody else says, oh, I'm not interested in that. Or they're on the dance floor and you put something on and then people just leave. And you think, but this song is like the most important thing. You know, I grew up listening to this and you don't want to stay. You know. But that's it. It's personal investment and we all have our own quirks. And sometimes it's best not to share it as well. Mm. But sometimes you don't want somebody to say, what a load of rubbish. You think, you know, that's my life. Thank you very much.
That was part of you. Yes, yeah.
But how did you end up? Because obviously I met you many years later. when you were doing your degree. But how, and I think you'd done some studying.
I'd done the teacher training from 74 to 77.
Yeah. How did you get into that? How did all that fall into place? How did you end up training to be a teacher?
Get there.
Yeah.
Well, very unfortunately, I did badly in school. And I lost all my confidence. And unfortunately, then we moved house and I moved schools. And that was the best thing that happened. But unfortunately, I had two nasty illnesses. Mm. So I never did very much. And I was always furious that I wasn't doing better, but I wanted to. And yet I was always afraid of failure, which I thought was all ridiculous, I know. But anyway, that's me. And then, you won't believe it, it all started off. I went to the Ministry of Agriculture. I was at the post office for many years on the telephone exchange. And it happened then that I was able to transfer and go to the Ministry of Agriculture. And I went to start with on the switchboard. Well, of course, you see, it's a farming community. Mm. And naturally, people want to speak in their first language. And it all started off, somebody asked for something. I knew it was an animal, but I couldn't remember which. And you did not tell people who didn't speak Welsh. It was one of the rulings. You found somebody that could do it, but nobody, of course, was with me. I was on my own. So I went through to us, and I said, somebody wanted so-and-so. I said, is it a sheep? And she was hysterical, nearly. And she said, no, we've heard of Taurus the bull. They wanted something to do it. Right, I put them on, and I thought, we can't cope with this. Mm. So I got hold of the local technical college and asked if they were doing Welsh classes. Mm. I thought, well, even if I'm not much good at it, if I get the names of animals or something, I'll know where to put people through without causing trouble. Mm. Anyhow, we went there. We had a marvellous tutor, one of those that could take all the fear of it away.
Yeah.
And it just went from there, and it went on a couple of years, and I decided to do an O-level in Welsh.
Mm.
But it was the O-level, which, as we would do a foreign language, you see. So that's what I did.
Mm.
And I picked up a couple of others at the same time. I had a bit more confidence then, have a bash. And in the end, I had my basic fivers. And and it went on. And then as I was getting older, thinking, well, now I've been in the civil service now nearly 20 years, another 20 to go. I thought, is it wise? What about, do I want to move into anything else? And as a youngster, I had then wanted to teach, but of course, because of everything that went wrong, couldn't. And somebody who was staying in one of our caravans, old friends of ours, talking to my father, and he said, and he was in teaching by this time, and he said, she could go to Trinity, good gosh, or anywhere else, you know. Well, yes, why not? Well, no, I don't have to have it, and in those days, could have grants. And I'm at your Pearson's grant, because I've been working for so long. So I knew, I said, and I thought, oh, gosh, I wonder. So I had a word with somebody I'd known from when he was a boy, and he said he'd have a word with his, with actually the vice principal, to see if it was possible, just to have a not an interview, but an informal talk, just to get an idea of what was what. I went up, so I said, oh, come at such, and I went up. And it got turned into a formal interview, and I was offered a place.
Yeah.
And that was the 1974 one.
Yeah. Mm. And often it's the best way that way, isn't it?
Yes, anyhow, I went, but it wasn't too good, and I wasn't in teaching long. But the thing is, it was exactly the same, the thing I needed to have, because I became a lay reader.
Mm.
And it was, in fact, it was very similar stuff to what I did with you,
only
that was a much higher level, of course. And then life went on. I was doing different things, and my mother died, and so I was here then, and did other jobs around, you know, to keep the wolf from the door. Retired, and 2 years later, then my father died, and I always wanted to do more, and I'd been going to this Lampeter certificate and a thing, and I'd got the first part. I was going to go on and do the next part, the diploma, they called it. And with that, there was something in the paper about there was a grant for people who were older, and if they would do part-time, and it was put up by Radio Ceredigion, the Welsh Assembly, and somebody else I can't remember. So I thought, well, even if I get further on with this in Narberth at night class, I wonder if they'll be doing this now in 2 years' time. Mm. So I thought I'd send for this, have a look at the brochure, see if it was... And I thought, well, I may not even get the other thing, let alone this. So I thought I can put it away safely for two years and then have a look. Anyhow, I got this thing now and read it all up. And then I had a letter from Trinity. You made an inquiry. We'd love to meet you. And we're having two open evenings. Would you like to come? And I did. And I spoke to, what's his name, Mr. Jones. I forgot what his first name was. He wasn't in our department. He was on the admin more. He was a congregational minister. Uh-huh. What was his name?
Tom Evans.
Tom Evans, yeah. I mean, not Mr. Jones, sorry. Yeah. I wonder if he's still alive.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. Anyhow... And then I was handed over to another gentleman and we had a long talk and that happened to be Dr. Will.
Yeah, yeah.
And the rest is
the
history.
The rest is history.
I was there a year then and then when you came in, the second and third year.
Yeah, because I was always aware and really impressed because at the time you were studying and a lot of and my students at Kent are sometimes in the same way, but you were studying... religion, theology, but of course you were also very much involved in the church.
Yeah.
And I always wondered, you know, whether anybody ever found attention there in the sense that, you know, you were writing essays on topics that, you know, sometimes may have coincided with or sometimes may have sort of deviated from, you know, particular things you believed in. But how do you find all that, sort of, the faith, studying religion and practising it?
Oh, I know, yes, all this demythologizing,
I know, that's my fault.
No, we never had it with you.
Did you not?
No, it was quite different.
Well, you can't normally stop me talking about Bultmann.
And, it was... a far more when I went there before. Mm. That was their aim. Mm. Sounded awful to sort of come down and clamp us, because I could see the reason, but it was a pity it was so soon, because some people perhaps would sort of come to faith and it would be, shall I say, a very right wing, and that's fair enough. Mm. And the tutors knew as soon as they go out into schools. It's all right with the infants or juniors, perhaps. But then they said they're clever sixth formers and that. But of course, if it's a case of, yes, we know all about that. It's so boring. We did that years ago, sort of thing. And it did upset some people very much, unfortunately. But it was a pity. And they said, well, we're here to pick up the bits. But it happened so soon that, I mean, they wouldn't go near any of them. You know, they became the enemy sort of thing, almost, you know. And they sort of made it up a bit more later, but it wasn't... there must have been another way of handling it, because you people didn't do anything like that.
No, but we did find, and I, you know, I'm aware, particularly in the subject that I teach, that you have to be more delicate sometimes, because you know that and also between the students, I've seen them, you know, real tension sometimes between those who will sort of say, I'm a raving atheist, and the other person, and you know that they're winding up somebody else who's evangelical Christian. And we have obviously people of other faiths in the class as well.
Yes.
And I've actually had students come to me sometimes and just say, you know, hang on, and they feel a little bit awkward. They don't know whether to say something feel that they're
going to be marked
the
down or something as though they would, you know.
Well, or they certainly fear that it's assumed sometimes. I don't just mean where I work now, but I mean, you know, generally over the years. But you always navigated that so well, because you always had this great love of the subject, and you always came back and you enjoyed the feedback, and it seemed as though you were, obviously I didn't know you in the days before, but it seemed as though it was like a really happy sort of life structure, that you loved going into college and learning. And meeting the other students. You really got on with them, didn't you?
They're fortunate that way. And especially the first time I was there, because we only lived a couple of miles away, so I was there longer in the day. Well, of course, the way we were doing it when you were there, of course, you'd only... because we used to have a full timetable, you see, whereas they would now only go in a couple of times in a week. And I mean, people that lived on campus, I mean, you'd be in and out the library all the time. Mm. But I mean, as we know, some people came from the other side of Swansea, yeah. and they couldn't stay very long, only the basic stuff, you see, when it's... Yeah, so I used to like that. Made some pals there, and
you stayed in touch with them.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was. I find that being at university, and particularly when you're on campus, I mean, I had the luxury of living on campus.
Oh yes, yeah.
Is that you realise that, you know, even if you're not told, right, you have to be in lectures, or, you know, even if somebody in those days, when I was an undergraduate, nobody took the register, but it's more a case of, well, I want to be here, that's what I'm here for. Yeah. It doesn't mean to say you can't then do all the, you can't play pool or go and have drinks and disco or whatever you want to do.
That's right, yeah.
And of course you do all of those things, but it's like finding the right balance. And also, I think that's a skill. You know, I went from home at the age of 18 to university, and I think I suddenly grew up, because it wasn't just the fact that I could do what I wanted and didn't have to ask anybody's permission, but I realised that I was actually doing it responsibly, and that worked for me. I could have a good time, but I didn't, I don't think I crossed too many.
No.
But boundaries. But it sounded as though, although you were very much around students who were younger than you when you did your degree, but it sounded as though what you were doing there was just like the most, you were so enthused, and there was something about the way the other students were engaging with the material. It sort of, my sense was that everybody collectively was really corresponding and really helping and really nurturing each other, and it sounded like it was just a perfect fit for you.
I certainly found that the last time I was there. There was a big difference. The first time I was there, everybody had grants.
Mm.
Some didn't have as much as some had, very basic. I remember one lad, and he was doing PE, and of course his trainers would wear out every 5 weeks, and he needed new ones, and he was one of three children at home.
Yeah.
But because and they kept a pub, and I think it was the father, I think it was his own, and therefore that affected the grant. He had very, very little, and he used to hate asking. His parents, they weren't mean, but he was thinking about the others younger than him, and yet he did keep needing these, and they were expensive, those sort of things.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, of course, they had, they perhaps only live a few miles away, but they stayed, and they stayed the whole time, you know, And it seemed, as I say, students always broke on you. But I mean, you know, and there wasn't, to some of them, there wasn't, unless it was a sort of bravado, say, oh, you creep, you know. The second time, I never heard anybody call anyone a creep.
No.
And I think that was because it was so much harder. I mean, they were in danger of running up debt. Well, I mean, they didn't have that sort of thing.
No,
and the others, they valued a lot of them. Well, a lot of them valued it anyway.
Yeah.
But I think they valued more because, you know, they'd have to pay for it directly.
Yeah, I think that I always remember being at the degree, when I got my first degree, and somebody next to me or nearby in the procession, I'd never seen him before. And I said, oh, hello. And I said, oh, so what are you graduating in? He said, oh, yeah, theology. And I think he may have known who I was, but he certainly hadn't been to any classes, certainly not the classes we had.
Oh, yes.
You know, I thought, well, we must have done some of the same classes. Yeah. It's not possible to completely miss each other. And at the end of the day, and he no doubt got the same degree classification as some other students who had gone to classes. But, you know, there was that sense that, for me, I can't speak for him. Maybe he had the best 3 years of his life, but also something was missing there. And it kind of misses the point, because it sets you up for life. And whether you do it as young or older, you know, it's clear that the skills that you learnt, you were very much applying later on in lay ministry. What about other things that you can remember from being at university? Was it, I mean, in the 70s as well, was it sort of very sort of political? Because, I mean, my sense is, politics.
Oh, golly, it was very, very hot. Yeah. It was Gwynfor Evans had got in. And, I mean, it was in everything.
And that was the Carmarthen, that when Plaid won the election in Carmarthen.
And it was very, very strong. Like.
Yeah.
Just before I got there, it was far worse. And people were going to jail. Tutors were going up to give them lectures in jail.
Yeah.
And then it quietened down. My years seemed quiet. I think they didn't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
And I remember being asked, as they asked us one day, because I was doing well studied, you see. Mm-hmm. So everybody had had anything like doing that, they had to. And they were saying, well, do you use Welsh all the time, you see, to the students? And dead quiet, didn't say very much, you know. So I said in the end, well, it depends really. I said, who you make friends with? Mm. Because I said, we're having people here from different parts of the world. I mean, there was somebody there from Holland, and as we know, there were a lot of American students here. Mm. Well, we're not going to turn our noses up at them. Mm. We make friends, whoever. Mm. And some people, it happens to be that the people they're best friends with, they're all well-speaking, so you can use it all the time. Oh. But we can't use it in front of our friends, or we're certainly not going to turn away from them. That's what one of the boys said. Yeah. Well, he said, some of us, of course, he said, we like to play rugby. So, of course, we mix in with all the rugby boys, you see, and some speak Welsh and some don't, and yet you sort of felt a bit, you know.
Mm.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it was a walking on barbed wire sometimes, of the, you know, in case you.
Yeah.
So anyway, then of course there was something towards the end, and a couple of them were taken off to prison for it. Were taken in for a little while. They had a case, and they paid up and came out and something. And yet those two girls, they helped me no end, because we were doing PE, and the tutor said, look, there's so few in the Welsh group. When some of you come and join them and do it in Welsh, because it's easier to do than a lot of, say you're doing English or various or geography or something. And he said, and you will understand it, or we'll help you. And I joined them. And now and then I'd get stuck. And whilst the teacher was lecturing, they'd be giving me a translation. Mm-hmm. And they were so helpful. In fact, there were people belonging to a particular group. They gave up when they did anything wrong, you know, painting signs or something, naturally.
Mm.
But what they never got to the media was that many of those students, for the first term, it would be from the beginning of Michaelmas term till Christmas, they would give up two hours every night, Monday to Friday, to teach anybody that wanted to learn Welsh, because they'd offer a lot of them got A-level and everything. Yes, yeah, so, but you never heard that, you see.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, they did sort of put their money where their mouth was.
Yeah. And that was in the 70s.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because when you returned, about 25 or so years later, did you find then that there was much less of an interest in politics on the part of
students?
Oh,
I don't
think
we heard anything about politics.
That was very much my sense.
If I was living in or, you know, in with things more than before, but I don't think people were interested in that then. No.
I think it's a change now. I've noticed it with my own students. But you're right, there was a period, and I think we have a friend who I think had a very different apprehension in the 1960s of what students were in the 2000s. I think it has come full circle now. But I was very aware that I'd be giving various examples of things I'd seen on Newsnight or Question Time or, you know, in the giving analogies, as you may remember I often did in my lectures, and I'd get all these blank faces. You know, don't you watch these programmes? No.
No.
So I realised, it's
me,
generational.
Oh, we don't want any of that.
Yeah.
Mm. Old hat, parents did it sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Some more, I always say more philosophically based questions at the end, but really it's just, looking back over your life, would you say your memories are predominantly positive ones?
Oh, a lot of them, yes. Well, there'd be some that weren't as well, you know.
Yeah. And is it possible, because I always find that, I think you've touched on this as well, you know, when there are negative experiences, sometimes that it is possible, and we said this about the war, you know, that it's possible sometimes to say, well, something's not right, or this is not a good or healthy environment, but maybe you might not know another environment. You know, you grew up during the war, but you don't know what it's like not to grow up in that environment. But did you, you know, it's possible sometimes, would you say, to find that though you can be maybe even nostalgic about negative experiences?
well, we went through things, and to a large extent, a lot of things, we just kept our heads down and tried to keep out of trouble and just hope it would pass.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be noticed. Wasn't a great big fighter like that, too much the other way. Had to behave myself,
yeah,
as we all did.
But if your 5 or your 15-year-old self knew what you were doing now, you know, or not really, right, you know, right now, but do you think that younger self would be surprised? Do you think that your younger self would say, yeah, actually, that, you know, that's exactly where I'd like to see myself? Or would you say, no, I don't recognise that at all? You know, that couldn't be me. I have, or might it be in the case that you had no idea what you would end up doing?
Well, if somebody said that I would have actually got to Trinity College in the 70s, I would have told them, don't be so stupid.
Yeah.
And if somebody had even said, oh, there's going to be a day when even you are going to get a degree,
yeah,
well, either it would have meant that the level was down to about 11 plus, or there's something wrong with them, you know.
Yeah.
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 I think that answers the question.
Yeah, but it does. But it sounds like that there's a sense that you've fulfilled. You sort of got what you wanted to do. It feels that you've managed. You know, you may have taken a more circuitous route.
Yeah.
You mentioned civil service. You went into teaching at an older age.
Yeah.
That might not have been right for you, but you did lay ministry and you got your degree.
Yes,
you may have done things in a different order to how other people did it. But it sounds like
it's kind of worked out.
I'm guessing you're quite proud of what you've done.
Getting lazy now, though.
You're allowed to have a rest sometimes, but. One more question, Judith. Would you say that you're a looking back or a looking forward type of person?
Well, there's not very much looking forward. I don't like to look forward very much because I don't know where how much longer there is, you know. And I suppose I do look back more than look forward.
Yeah.
But I hope I'm not living in the past. No, I don't think I've got any great ambitions. I think I've done more or less what I want to do, and that's it. But as I say, it's friendships and things like that I'm more interested in now, you know. And
And you're still in touch with friends from your past?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And friends of the present as well, yeah.
Yeah. Judith, it has been so amazing to catch up with you this afternoon. Thank you so much.
And thank you so much.